Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Brandon, the return of Sasha Banks, I think unexpected tonight. I think people expected if it was going to happen, it would be a surprise, so to speak, at the Rumble itself. What do you think about the decision to add her into the conversation 24 hours before the Rumble, and what do you take from the interaction she had with Charlotte tonight?
So I thought that if Sasha was going to show up, I think like most, that it would be in the Rumble match itself. But bringing her out tonight says one of two things, and it could be a little bit of both, or it could be one or the other. I think that we're looking at a situation where they knew that tonight's show was going to be heavy on promos, heavy on hype for the Rumble, and very little else to deliver in the way of good in-ring action or anything super meaningful in the main event scene. So they may have felt it necessary to give the live crowd the Sasha Banks return to at least say that, you know, there was something, you know, worth mentioning, worthwhile on this show. But I think what might be the more likely of options is they have other surprises planned for the Women's Royal Rumble, and they didn't want Sasha's return, being out only around like 3 to 4 weeks, to get lost in that. I mean, I know we've talked about the possibility that Bayley will be returning. She certainly teased it on social media. Now there's been rumors of Ronda Rousey and a couple of others. So I think that they may have something in line for the Rumble, be it Bayley, be it someone else, and they didn't quite want to muddy the waters, so to speak, with whoever they've got lined up for the Women's Royal Rumble match.
So an embarrassment of riches. We can afford to put Sasha on SmackDown. It'll help increase interest. We can have Sasha and Charlotte interact a bit, but we're still got some surprises for you, so we didn't spend our surprise the night before on broadcast television. Yeah, I think that's probably true, and we'll see. You know, is your thinking both Ron and Bayley show up, or do you think the Ronda thing will turn out to be just rumors? It'll be more about Bayley, or vice versa.
I'm certainly, if I were placing a bet on it, I think I would put the money on Bayley and not Ronda. I mean, I don't want to rule out Ronda, but for me, that feels more like a rumor, and Bayley's almost feels like a bit of a foregone conclusion at this point.
Yeah. What do you think of Charlotte and Sasha? It's super clear that Sasha's babyface and Charlotte's the heel in their interactions. And I think both of those characters have suffered from kind of ambiguity in terms of how they've been portrayed or being turned too often. Or actually, I shouldn't say they were turned too often. They just would show up one week and suddenly be acting differently without a turn. Or the announcers would talk about them differently and they'd have different opponents, you know, typically. So I like this. I mean, I think there's pros and cons to Sasha as a face or a heel, but fans just like her. And sometimes you can't fight that. You know, that's the sort of Becky Lynch challenge right now. And with Charlotte, I mean, fans see her as a star, but she's way better as a heel for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so even if she gets the star pop, I think she's so much more effective at being a heel. So I think they lined things up well, and I'm glad that they got that established tonight.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's a net positive that they're aligned in those specific positions. Charlotte is clearly the better heel of the two, and Banks, when working with Charlotte, is definitely the better face, given the size disparity. I don't think that Sasha Banks working as a heel against Charlotte ever really works, and I think most of the time when they've been matched up, it has been the sort of the correct designation. One of the things that struck me tonight is just that they've done this match so many times. I mean, it's bordering on John Cena and Randy Orton at this mm-hmm. point, and it doesn't feel fresh. I think that it's been long enough that they're going to be able to get away with it, but if they're teasing something like Charlotte Flair versus Sasha Banks at WrestleMania, that doesn't feel like a WrestleMania match to me anymore. It feels like something you can get away with on a B pay-per-view, but something that hasn't sat sort of on the back burner heating up for long enough to make me want to see it on a large stage again as a major featured feud. I just think that they've worked each other so many times in so many different iterations that there's almost no way to make these two facing each other again feel fresh, especially when their characters haven't changed a whole lot. I thought that Banks was good tonight. I think that the reaction was very indicative that the crowd is fully on board with cheering her and getting behind her as a babyface. And I think even if she is oftentimes better as a heel, having her as a babyface right now is important given the mainstream exposure that she's had. I just think that she's going to bring some eyeballs to the product, whether it be people actually physically tuning into SmackDown and shows like Royal Rumble, or just in a more non-traditional, non-linear sense of people watching her clips online. I think that it's important mm-hmm. for her to be viewed in a positive light right now versus that heel character. So they definitely got that right. I think on the flip side, Flair has been floundering a bit for me as of late. I'm not a huge fan of her entering the Royal Rumble, but I understand why they're doing it, and I think that it's going to set up their direction for WrestleMania. I thought tonight her promo was a bit too generic. I mean, opening up with the idea that, you know, she should be thanked by fans in Kansas City because she's bringing a championship to their city, and that's something that the Chiefs aren't ever going to do again. That's not only is that blatant cheap heat, it's cheap heat that doesn't make sense. Because, I mean, the Chiefs, I looked at the sports book right after she said that line. The Chiefs are at plus 120 right now. They are the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. So you get away with a line like that when you are talking about the most successful franchise in professional football over the last 5 years. It just doesn't add up. I mean, you can say that in New York. You can say it in plenty of cities and have it work for some cheap heat. But here it just felt like so shoehorned to me, and I it put me off from her whole promo.
It is part of that the point that she's just wrong and the fans, I mean, that the fans will be thinking, well, we brought it, we won, and we're going to win again, and or does it make it seem like WWE's oblivious or it's cheap heat?
It makes her seem oblivious to something that I don't think it, because the cheap heat aspect works even if it's not my favorite thing. I mean, if you're in New York City and you're saying about the Jets, well then yeah, I mean that makes sense.
Like
the
Jets, right.
The Jets haven't won anything in years. I mean, the Chiefs are, again, like the most successful franchise of the last, you know, half decade or so. So, yeah, I think it comes down hard on her and the promotion rather than getting the heat that they desire. It's because it's just so flatly wrong.
Yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. Did Sonya or Aaliyah or Shotzi make an impression on you, good or bad? For people who didn't see the show, they had a parade of people come out before Sasha did. So Charlotte comes out, talks about the Kansas City Chiefs and all that. And then Sonya, Lee, and Shotzi came out, followed by Sasha Banks. We talked a lot about Sasha and Charlotte so far. Did the other three make an impression either way?
So you mentioned you were saying Sonya, but it was Shayna Baszler in that segment.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So, I thought that what stood out for me most with Shayna Baszler was the new music. I don't know if that was her first time with it or if it's happened in the last couple of weeks and I just didn't notice. But I always thought she had music that really stood out. So replacing it seemed a little off the mark for me. Maybe I'll get used to it. Maybe it's a theme that will catch on. But it just first listen, it didn't catch me the way that her old theme did. I thought that it was sort of the standard cavalcade of potential challengers kind of parading down and then all carefully standing in the ring, evenly spaced apart, staring directly at the hard camera the way no one would ever stand if they were having a conversation between five people. It just felt a little forced to me. The story was clearly about Banks and Flair as it should be in a situation like that. Aaliyah, bless her heart. I mean, she's trying, but it wasn't good. She seemed genuinely starstruck when Sasha Banks came out, and I don't know if that was just like, I'm not sure if that should be endearing or if that should be like, oh man, maybe you don't belong here. Like, it was interesting, but you know, Shotzi and Natty, it's like nobody's taking them seriously as potential winners of the Rumble. So yeah. To have them in there, it's kind of like. What I thought it did more than anything else is expose how thin the women's roster is on SmackDown. So to juxtapose the women standing in the ring with Cole and McAfee trying to sell the fact that this Royal Rumble match was just going to have all these decorated women and legends, it was just like, well, you kind of have the whole roster out here and we can see what it is.
That's the danger of overtly advertising who's going to be in the Rumble when it's, you know, I don't know, 70% filler. Some would say 90% filler, probably not quite to that level. But you know, yeah, you start putting the people out there who are there, and it's hard when you haven't been making a case for them on week to week booking for a couple of months. And
don't anyone.
Yeah, that's a thing. Yeah, even I mean, but the wrestlers who are on top, you go, okay, you know, if you're not breaking down exactly the booking scheme of everything. To narrow it down even more, there's a handful of people who you go, well, they're big enough stars and they're, quote, good enough, right. They could win and headline WrestleMania. But WWE doesn't really try with everybody else to tell backstory, to create a backstory so that by the time we get to a night like this, they can actually have a few people come out and seem like legitimate dark horses.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have to kind of manufacture and conjure up ideas in sort of the spirit of covering all bases. But it takes some work to make a case for, and this applies to men's Rumble too, for, you know, an Austin Theory winning, or at this stage, you know, poor Big E winning. So, you know, the list is pretty narrow, but at the same time, I still vote to do it. The fact is there's some teams in the NFL who don't make the playoffs, but you know, you don't ignore that they're in the league. And so, you know, Shayna, Aaliyah and Shotzi are in the playoffs, but you know, they don't have a chance to win the Rumble. They're kind of the equivalent of that, but I think you want to acknowledge them and give them a few seconds to make their case.
Yeah, it's especially how I feel about Shayna, because that's someone who they clearly initially had plans for at one point, and she's sort of fallen by the wayside, and she could easily have been one of those dark horse challengers that, you know, she probably isn't going to win the Rumble, but still they could have built her up in the last few weeks to make her seem like a credible threat.
Yes.
And they just haven't done that. They just haven't put any effort in, not only to the men and women who are dark horses, who probably aren't going to win, but could have an impressive showing. They really haven't put any effort into anyone, period. To make you think that they are a front runner for the Rumble.
No, that's right. All right, well, let's pause, introduce ourselves, give out the phone numbers, and introduce some callers into our conversation. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, January 28th, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. Updated with news, live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, or PLE coverage tomorrow night with star ratings, match analysis, full details on matches, and much more. So hopefully you're checking that out every day on your phone or laptop. And also I'm the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Speaking of which, the Blue Logo Show, a separate feed from this one, our Red Logo Show, just search Wade Keller, by the way, on your podcast app. Both will pop up. Be sure you're subscribed to both. They're both free. And on the blue feed, we had Sam Roberts on from WWE to do an in-depth two-hour conversation previewing the Royal Rumble. He also talked a bit about his experience at the GCW World event this past weekend. But it's always great talking with Sam, exploring all kinds of possibilities for the Rumbles, and the Rumble matches, and the three title matches and the mixed tag coming up tomorrow night. So hope you check that out. And then the day before that, also on the blue feed, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joined me as co-host on our flagship, and we also spent a lot of time talking about the Rumble at the start of the show, but we also covered other things like AEW and GCW and more. So some good listening between now and bell time for the Rumble on Saturday, worth checking out if you haven't yet. The other voice you hear so far on this show is Brandon LeClair. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, and he will be reporting on the Royal Rumble live on PWTorch.com tomorrow night, Saturday night, as the Rumble occurs. His report and my report will be right there next to each other. So so you can flip back and forth and compare our the details we're able to pick out, because Brandon, it's hard to cover the Rumble live and catch everything, and also get different perspectives on the matches and the booking as the event progresses. So pull yourself away from Twitter and be sure you've got a window open for pwtorch.com to check out our reports. Brandon, welcome. Great having you here tonight as co-host.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. Always a lot of fun, especially these go-home shows right before the pay-per-views. And yeah, I am I'm excited, optimistic, but a little nervous about covering the Rumble. This is my first live coverage of a Royal
you
Rumble.
You and Pat McAfee.
I actually started doing my pay-per-view coverage with the February show last year. So I missed the Rumble by one event.
We went throwing into the water for the Rumble.
So this is coming around. This is making my first full year doing these pay-per-views. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I'm gonna lean a little bit into what I've had to pull out of the hat with the AEW pay-per-views and trying to keep up with the moves, because that can be a little more challenging than the WWE side. Although commentary helps a little bit there, unlike on the WWE side. So.
And with the Rumble these days, in the Peacock era, there's some commercial breaks where you can take a rest and catch up and not fall further behind. So everybody check that out. Brandon, how can people follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter. And I talk wrestling and movies and football and music and all that good stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, let's give out the phone numbers. We invite you to join our conversation tonight on SmackDown and that will, by definition, include some talk about the Royal Rumble. The phone number for our live show is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard and lets us know that you want to be on the show. And you can also email us if that works better for you, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com. Phone lines are filling up, so let's get to them. And we will begin tonight with Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, Sasha's back. How are you feeling tonight?
I'm good. It was a shocker. I legit did not expect that at all. It was because they said that she's going to come back like sometime. I was thinking next month or in March, so when she has shocked about that, and so when so and I'm saying and I feel this way now. Kind of I felt this way the last 2 months anyway. That she was I picked to win the Rumble match. It just made sense. It felt like it was the right time this year for her to win the Rumble, and you know all this. Everyone was assuming it was going to be Bianca Belair, which you know if that does happen. I think the problem is for me, if it ends up being Bianca Belair, I just fear, this is my only personal opinion about it, is that if she does win again, how people will feel about it 2 years in a row for her winning it. Now, granted, last year it was during the Thunderdome, there was no fans there. This year there is, so probably it's a little bit differently. But that was my whole thought process there. But, you know, so what do you think about that, though, in general? Just if Bianca Belair does win the Rumble, how will people feel about it? I mean, is it because I'll feel bad for her if she gets. She may not get booed, but it's just that thought process for the last few weeks. I keep hearing that. What do you think about that, Rafesh?
Yeah. So first of all, I want to interject and add to your question, Kyle. I thought they did a really nice job with the video package on the Rumble, with the narrator talking about the multi-time winners in the past: Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin. Only Austin's done it twice. Can Bianca Belair add her name to that list? It added that storyline to WWE's narrative, or underlined that as one of the kind of official storylines, I guess, heading into the Women's Royal Rumble. I don't think people will be upset, other than they might feel it's a flat ending if they don't do something really good with some surprises and an angle leading up to it. And that's one of the challenges of booking the Rumble is you want, especially if a babyface is winning, you want fans to be happy, not let down, that it, you know, because we've seen that before. You know, Daniel Bryan's gotten in the way. Rey Mysterio's gotten in the way a little bit of getting the reactions that people wanted. Not their fault, of course. Brandon, your thoughts on Kyle and that video package and the possibility something that should be celebrated when a lead babyface wins could backfire.
Yeah, I thought the video package was the best part of the night by a fairly large margin. And those Rumble packages typically are very good. And I like the way that they bring history into it and the way that they sort of tie in past wins and what it would mean for those same wrestlers to win again, or who they're tying or who they're surpassing by accomplishing that. I think it brings a lot of prestige to the matches themselves that sometimes the storytelling doesn't lend credence to. So I'm always a big proponent and a big fan of those packages, and I thought this one was really, really good. I think that Bianca Belair winning as a babyface for a second year in a row, it feels like an outlier to me at this point. It doesn't seem like the most likely of scenarios, but I certainly don't think it is entirely unlikely. I think that it's certainly within the realm of possibility. And I don't think that they'll have much of an issue crowd-wise if that's the direction that they go. Now, there are certainly ways for it to go haywire, and that really is dependent on the booking. I mean, if you bring the final two down to someone like Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, then you're hoping that the crowd reaction will be more or less split 50-50, and the crowd will err on the side of being accepting of Bianca if she eliminates Sasha. But there's other scenarios where you can have Bianca and Charlotte Flair as the final two, for example, and I think very clear cut, Bianca Belair would be cheered significantly over Charlotte, and fans would be very happy if she won. So I don't think that there should be all that much concern if the plan were to be to go with Bianca. I just think it takes some simple strategic booking to ensure that she gets a positive reaction.
Kyle, back to you. Any follow-up on that or another topic?
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm actually here, but I just think in general, I think at WrestleMania itself is going to be Sasha and Charlotte and Bianca and Becky. I think that's what's going to be the bottom line at WrestleMania. This is how to get there will be interesting. I still feel like, I don't know, I've been feeling this way since 2020 of having Sasha winning the Rumble. So I've been feeling that way since 2 years ago. So I just have a feeling that this was the year for her to win. I still feel that way, and I still have that feeling. So that's what I'm thinking will happen, and I don't know, we'll see. But, yeah, and so, and then also, too, this was about two segments, the beginning and the ending. And that was Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. It seems to me the way they've been booking this, it seems like the way they've been booking it and having Seth Rollins keep on saying that I beat you this many times every time I beat you for a championship I win and all this stuff, and he got the better of him again, and he didn't. I also like the fact that they didn't really touch either, because they always like to brawl before a big pay per view match like this. So kind of glad they haven't really been physical with each other. But I just have I'm very conflicted here, because part of my brain is thinking that I kind of want Rollins to win, because I'm more of a Rollins fan than Reigns. But I know that, you know, they're going to do this whole thing with Brock Lesnar, and also too, it's going to be like the match order too, of what's going to be first. The Universal title will be first, or the WWE Championship will be first. But to me, it's like, man, every time headed into this match, though, with the build to it, and granted, it hasn't been that much. So we've been only, what, a few weeks, so, but from that, Rollins has been in the upper hand of Reigns, with him being just, I don't know, it feels like, it's so hard to hear how the fans feel about it, because I think people like both guys, and it's like, they're both doing great work, and it's like, but it's just, that's the other thing, how will fans react to either one of them? They're both are getting cheered, so what do you think about that type of thing with tonight and throughout the feud?
Yeah. We haven't talked about that yet. I'm very curious, Brandon, what your assessment is of the decision to go with Seth and Roman, and then where you think WWE has been steering fans or trying to lead fans in this storyline in terms of who they kind of prefer you to cheer. It seemed like Seth was more heelish this week, and I thought he was more heelish a couple weeks ago. If I'm remembering the timeline right, it seemed like maybe Roman was a little more heelish last week. It just hasn't felt clear to me. Has it felt clear to you what their intention is, even if it hasn't worked out how they want it?
I thought that it has gotten a little bit clearer as the weeks have progressed. Now, if you had asked me several weeks ago, I could point to a Twitter conversation that I had with the Torch's Zach Adorn and Frank Pediani. We had discussed a little bit back and forth in messages about how I had thought, and they had discussed a little bit on one of their shows together, that it was starting to seem like a possibility that Seth could be turning babyface. And I was a little bit more adamant about that than especially Frank was. And I think that where that came into play for me was Seth's promo at day one. He was sort of almost complimentary of his opponents in the Fatal Five-Way match. And the line that he delivered at the end of the promo where he said, "I'm going to stomp them all and walk out WWE champion," felt like a very traditional rallying cry for a WWE babyface. And during that promo, he didn't have the laugh. He didn't have a lot of the other like trappings that he's come to rely on in this as this heel character. And so I thought that was the first clue that they may be turning him. And then, of course, the next week came and all of that sort of went by the wayside. They went right back to everything Seth had been doing. And I think since that time, they've leaned into the heel character even more heavily. I thought tonight it was rather clear that you were supposed to be behind Roman Reigns. And I think that the crowd has slowly been gravitating in that direction. As far as the decision to match these two up right now, I thought just from a pure logistical standpoint in terms of WWE storytelling, I hate it because there's virtually no reason for Seth Rollins to be challenging for the title. He's a Raw wrestler. He should be on Raw. There's no particular reason for him to come over to SmackDown to challenge for this title other than it being some arbitrary decision made by Adam Pearce. So in that respect, I dislike it. I also think that WWE has booked themselves into a little bit of a conundrum here, because I think that when they put this match together, it was an idea to get a big title match for the Royal Rumble that would feel like two legitimate, solid, established main event acts. And to me, through the promo work, through the way that Seth Rollins has come off as a character, it has undermined Seth Rollins, shown that Roman Reigns is vastly superior in terms of the WWE hierarchy, and put Seth Rollins closer to, say, Kevin Owens than to someone at Roman Reigns' level. And I don't think that that was their intention, because Seth needs to be a top guy on Raw, and I think the way that this has played out so far has shown how firmly cemented Roman Reigns is as a main eventer and how much Seth has slidden into upper mid card.
What do you think of Roman having this much time without Paul Heyman and the Usos standing out there alone, and how he's done and how he's done? I know how you feel he is positioned in the perception compared to Seth and Seth not being at his level, but has this been good for Roman to sort of branch out and carry segments, and here he is sort of reacting to Seth trying to get in his head, and so we're seeing more acting range? Or is this chipping away at the veneer and the godlike status, to use Roman's terminology, of his character?
There's definitely been a shift, and it does feel a little bit different to me, and I don't know if I'm feeling that he's less of a big deal right now because they've sort of undermined Seth Rollins as his challenger. And because you have someone with a stature like Brock Lesnar over on Raw, whereas before Roman Reigns was clearly the guy. I mean, there was no question. I mean, prior to Brock Lesnar returning, there was no one even close to Roman Reigns' level. I mean, his not only in terms of perception in the storytelling, but just the level of commitment, the level of dedication to the character, the presentation, all of it, the whole package. Reigns was the guy. And I think now that there's been so much focus on Brock Lesnar over on Raw, along with a shift of a lot of the assets, a lot of the talent assets to Raw to make Raw feel beefier, to make it feel like overall a bigger show, I think it's made Roman feel a little lesser than he had previously. And I don't think that not having the Usos backing him up, standing there, sort of barking in affirmation when he says something, or Paul Heyman standing back there nodding in approval, I don't think it's done him favors. And I don't mean that as a slight to Roman's range mm-hmm. and his ability on the microphone, but rather the credence that those guys lend his words. I think that the Usos and Paul Heyman bring so much to that character, and the positive affirmation that they give him makes him seem like that much more of a big deal. And so when Reigns is alone in the ring by himself talking this huge game, he's like any other heel in that he's saying it to the audience, but there's no one there agreeing with him. There's no one there backing him up. And I think that hurt him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I look at him differently standing alone, not just because it's Seth, but it's the absence of other players and him being arrogant towards Paul Heyman and holding his hand out and Heyman mm-hmm. at his back and call. And it's different seeing him stand out there. What do you think of his acting tonight when Seth, you know, said you've never won the big one? The match that matters against me, and and they started ripping on his family and saying they're all awful and all that. Did his pauses and his facial expressions ring true and seem effective to you?
Yeah, I don't think that he really has lost a step. I think that his delivery is still right up there. I think the issues that I'm having rely more on what's not happening in the background than it does the way that he's carrying himself.
Yep. All right, cool. Colin, I'm going to throw back to you for closing words before I move on to another caller.
So my last thing to say is pretty much what I said last week about SmackDown itself is that, you know, it's clear they only care about Roman Reigns, Charlotte Flair, and Sasha Banks on SmackDown. That's it. Every other male wrestler on SmackDown doesn't matter, and that's not why I watch wrestling for. That's why I'm really intrigued what's going to happen after tomorrow's are over with. How are they going to make it interesting with Roman Reigns' title run? How are they going to help the rest of these wrestlers that seem are so in the low total pole in the roster with not credible opponents for him to face? So that's what I'm going to be interested in because this is about him and no one else matters, and that's not good. So I'll leave you with that. Thanks for the call.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Kyle. Anything you want to add, Brandon?
No. I don't.
Sounds good. All right, let's move next to Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, thanks for calling. What did you think of SmackDown tonight? What stood out?
Well, the same as Kyle. Sasha Banks returning. I'm very happy she returned and she's back. I was very surprised. I didn't think she was going to come back till late February at the earliest. I mean, that's what I heard. Mm-hmm. I heard, a lot of stories that Sasha and Charlotte, was going to be canceled, because Sasha might not make it in time. But I found that hard to believe because as long as she came back by March, they could have pushed the match. So, but yeah, I'm glad she came back tonight. I was, like Kyle, I was shocked. Yeah, I did not expect that at all. But do you think they should have saved her surprise return for the Rumble, or do you think they made the right choice by doing it tonight?
We did cover that at the very beginning of the show. You might have missed it, Mike. But, yeah, the short answer is if they have Ronda Rousey and Bayley or other surprises, then I think it's good to get Sasha out there as a way to just build some excitement and conversation in the 24 hours before the event.
I do think there's another possibility that just kind of occurred to me as we were talking about that, and that's that Banks wasn't very involved physically tonight. I mean, she sort of took the shot on Charlotte and then stepped out of the ring and kind of watched the chaos unfold. The Rumble is one of those matches where, you can enter that match and remain relatively protected or almost entirely protected throughout the course of the match. So I think that another possible explanation for not bringing her in tomorrow is that Banks isn't going to win because she's not physically ready to go at a significant level. And so at least getting her in the match and getting her quickly eliminated by Charlotte by nefarious means sets up their match for down the road when she's physically ready, and also doesn't completely ruin the surprise. Because if you surprise fans with a Sasha return and she's eliminated in a minute or two by Charlotte Flair, they're going to turn on the match. Whereas in this respect, she's already returned.
Mike?
Yeah, that's very true. So, I mean, I want her to win it, you know, but I don't mind that scenario to set up their match at WrestleMania. I hope Ronda Rousey's in it. You know, I think if Rousey's in it, Sasha won't win probably. You know, but I'm still rooting for Sasha to win. But if she don't win, I'd like to see either Belair or Rousey win. Or and if Charlotte wins and then chooses to face Sasha, if they go that route, I don't mind that either.
Mm-hmm.
But what you were saying earlier, Brent.
This could have been the setting here might have been to set the stage for that, you know, among the list of possibilities for the finish of the Women's Rumble, Brandon, is if Charlotte has a beef with Sasha winning the Rumble and picking her, I haven't thought through what story they would tell that's better than Sasha just winning outright, but that is a possibility Mike throws out there.
Yeah. I think there's more intrigue in terms of directions they can go. I think there's more intrigue in the Women's Rumble than there is the men's, really.
I was thinking that too, Brandon, because you have like so many that could win this thing. You know, you've got Sasha that could win it, Belair, Rousey if she returns, Bayley if she returns, Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's very exciting. It's more exciting than the men's, I think. Like, there's a lot of strong possibilities for the Women's Rumble. So, yeah, I'm very excited for the Women's Rumble this year. We'll see how it goes. But, what you were saying earlier, Brandon, about Sasha and Charlotte being fresh. See, I disagree. I think it's a fresh match now. It's kind of like how Reigns and Lesnar, like the roles are reversed. And I think, even though it's Sasha the babyface, Charlotte's the heel, it's the same as, you know, 2016 was when they faced off in their feud back then. Sasha is a lot more established now. She's more of a big star than she was back in 2016. And she's even more crisp in the ring than she was back then. She's just getting better all the time. And she's to the point now where she can wrestle a broomstick. She is amazing in the ring. And I think her and Charlotte, they have the potential to put on better matches than they did even in 2016. So I think their Mania match is very exciting. I think, you know, that they possibly could steal the show. So what do you guys think about that?
Brandon, throw you on that too.
Yeah, I definitely am more positive on it than I compared it to Randy Orton versus John Cena. I wouldn't say that it's at that level. It's just they feel like they have faced each other that many times. But I mean, if you asked me if I wanted to see Charlotte Flair versus Sasha Banks or Randy Orton versus John Cena, I'm gonna take Charlotte and Sasha every time. I don't doubt that they can have a really good match, and I do hope that the elevated presence for Sasha Banks can help sort of carry that feud into new territory. I think my biggest reservation with it is just the history of that match is so favored towards Charlotte, and I don't know what the actual win-loss split is. They could be equal. I have no idea. But it feels like it so heavily favors Charlotte because all we were talking about at that time, and rightfully so, was that Banks could never defend her title. She would win the title, and then she would just lose it. And so I feel that taste is sort of still in my mouth from that feud, and I certainly hope if they go in that direction that they can sort of move away from that and get to a situation where it feels like Banks is more of an equal.
Right. Like if Sasha wins at Mania, give her another long title run like they did last year. You know, don't have her lose it in like a month. I think she, you know, she's earned, you know, she should have another, you know, 4 to 6 month run, you know, because the only good run she had as champion was last year, you know, when she beat Bayley and then lost it to Belair. And I think she deserves another run. as champion. So, yeah, like you said, beat Charlotte and then have a good run from there. You know, don't drop it back to Charlotte a month later. I hope that's not where they go. I don't think that they will.
Cool. Mike, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, like if Ronda Rousey, if she is in the Rumble, do you think that's a given? Like she's got to win it, or is there a way to eliminate her that won't, you know, piss fans off or make her look weak? Like, how do you think you would do that? Like, would Becky come down, distract her? What do you think?
I mean, I guess if you're – I think there's a chance, Brandon, that fans push back hard at overt attempts to get fans to boo Becky and cheer Ronda. Todd Martin mentioned on The Fix yesterday, the VIP show that I do with him every Thursday, that, you know, a lot of the fans who went against WWE storylines over the years and expressed discontent are just watching AEW now. Like, they have an alternative. They don't need to complain anymore about the Jets. They're just Giants fans. Or they don't have to complain about the Mets. They're just Yankee fans, that kind of thing. So there's a chance, like, maybe WWE could get them to go along with it. But there's some danger there if they position Ronda where it seems like she's getting heavy-handed booking to try to get fans to turn against her. And if you just share space with Becky and Ronda without having a chance to tell your story, you know, fans might react instinctively. And I mean, Ronda's a big star, but I don't know if that's worn off over time. And I think Becky, what was Becky's nickname for Ronda? A little weirdo. She called her weird. Yeah. So, you know, and Ronda is kind of weird, you know, so it sort of rings true. And Ronda can come across as, you know, a prickly and thin-skinned and temperamental in a way that I don't think is super appealing. So there's a risk with anything they do with Ronda. But if she gets eliminated, there's also – it can kind of send a message. She's a big star, but she's not getting, you know, mega star treatment. Like, she's going to kind of have to earn her way to the main event in some other way, and that might serve her well if their goal is for her to be cheered. So I don't know. Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting choices to be made, and there's some peril in some of them. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, I think if she's going to come in the match and not be the winner, then I think you need to send a message that there's a big match for her coming down the line. And if that is Becky Lynch, which of course does make the most sense. I mean, they should have been the one-on-one match at WrestleMania in New York. I think Charlotte was unnecessarily shoehorned into that match, and the match was fine, but that was very clearly the Banks. That was very clearly Becky and Ronda's feud. And I think that that's the match you want to go with if Ronda is in fact coming back. And if that's the case, then yeah, I don't see there being an issue with Becky getting involved and leading to Ronda's elimination. I'm not sure what way the crowd goes in there. I think there is definitely a case to be made for Todd's point that they have just eroded that level of sort of disdain with the story directions that they take, and those fans have jumped ship to AEW. I also think that maybe there is some lingering resentment for Ronda Rousey for leaving when she did, for coming off kind of ornery toward the end of her run there. Some of the things that she said in the media, both during her time there and after her time there. There's definitely a possibility that there is still some bad blood there with some fans and that they are not interested in cheering her. And if that's the case, man, it's going to be really tough if you're putting her against Becky Lynch. So I want to say that they may need to adjust on the fly, but we know that they're not good at that. So it could be kind of a sticky situation depending on what the plan is with Ronda.
Mike, any follow-up on that before we move on?
I want to touch on what Sam Roberts said. I liked his idea of Bianca Belair versus Rousey. That's another that would be a fantastic match, I think. Yeah, I would like to see him go in that direction.
Yeah, Rousey as a heel against Bianca as a babyface to help solidify help elevate Bianca and give her a WrestleMania moment against this, you know, special attraction star. Does that appeal to you more, Brandon, than the other options with Ronda?
Yeah, I think that's definitely interesting. A heel Ronda Rousey and Bianca Belair. if Ronda comes in as a heel, I don't think that there is going to be much resistance to that. And at worst case scenario, I think in that situation, you have both Ronda and Belair cheered. And I don't know that that's necessarily the worst thing. Whereas there's a lot of unknowns on the other side. If you bring in Ronda as the babyface, Becky Lynch as the heel, I think that could go very, very wrong for them. So yeah, I'm definitely interested in that match. I mean, if Ronda is not coming in as a one-off just to face presumably Becky, then I mean, I'd like to see both.
All right, cool. Mike, I appreciate your call.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy the Rumble tomorrow night. Should be a fun one.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, it's one of the highlights of the year. Cool. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. If you joined us midstream, you're certainly welcome to call up still. And when you do, push 1 on your keypad. If you're attending a future Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, we'd love to have you as an on-site correspondent on this show afterwards. We didn't hear from anyone tonight who wanted to be on as an on-site correspondent. So we don't always get them for every show. So, you know, consider that a nudge to volunteer yourself if you'd like to be on. The best way to do that is just email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, our show email. And be sure to put the city in the subject line and the date so that we can kind of stay organized with volunteers, because sometimes people let us know, you know, a month or two ahead when they get their tickets. All right, on to our next callers. We'll go to Nick in Brattleboro next. Nick, welcome. What'd you think of SmackDown, the final hype for the Rumble tonight?
Well, I wasn't expecting much, and WWE didn't disappoint. but one thing I wanted to just continue on with the Women's Rumble, and I can't remember where I heard it. It may have been on Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, but a scenario that just piques my interest is, let's say you've got Charlotte and Bianca are still in. Number 30 hasn't come out. They do some move where they're pulling someone over the top rope, and they pull the other person over, so they're both eliminated. And Bailey comes out, goes into the middle of the ring, goes, "I win," and you know, because her knee might not be ready to actually wrestle yet, but this puts her in line for the championship and gives her 2 more months to rehab the knee. And I just think it would just be such a great moment, and would fall into that Bailey character of opportunist and smart. You know, I don't remember who I heard it. It really piques my interest.
Brandon, any thoughts on that?
I've silenced him.
Are you muted, Brandon? Perhaps. We cannot hear Brandon.
I said he dropped dead at the thought.
Oh God, that would not be good. Brandon, give
no,
me another second
really.
Here. He shows up as being on the call. So that's kinda weird.
I hope he's okay.
I know. So, as far as Bailey goes, I mean, the Rumble is an opportunity to have somebody who's not 100% physically ready enter the Rumble and find a sneaky way to win without being really physically active. I'm concerned, Nick, that people might see through that, and that, you know, they would go, "That's not really a legit participation."
I know.
Yeah.
So it'll just be fun.
I don't know. Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is there's so many cool options with some of the mystery players who aren't announced yet. Okay, Brandon just messaged, said I am here. Brandon, can we hear you now? We cannot hear you. What's
I have
up?
That impact on people.
I feel like Sami Zayn. You know, we're going to edit all this out. We're going to edit all this out on the live podcast. I want to talk about Sami too. Brandon, do you still want to type your thoughts out loud?
I'll move on. I mean, if you want.
Yeah. Well, no. I want to figure this out here. So let me.
Okay.
Let me see here. I'm gonna.
I'm watching.
Oh, did I? Oh, he shows that he's muted on my screen. So I think Brandon accidentally hit the mute button. Yeah, Brandon, hang up your Skype, and I'll call you back on the call. All right, he left. So stand by, everybody. We'll call.
I can't wait to listen to this tomorrow and see if you actually do edit this out.
Oh, I usually edit out your entire call, Nick, so I've got good practice.
Oh, okay.
totally
just for that, the dog that shall not be named is gonna. I'm gonna send him a really good bone, and he's gonna chew it up and all over your house.
He had so much fun on his walk today. I was so cold, but he was frolicking.
Yeah, it was really funny because when you were talking about that, I used to on Barkley. I used to put. He had they're called Muckalucks. And they slip over his paws, and they have a little Velcro strap that wrapped around it. And because when you live in the city and there's all the salt and stuff on the street, that's worse than the snow. Is that, you know, they get all that crap on their feet, and then they lick it off, and it's bad for them. It's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. There's a cream that's specifically for dog paws too that protects them from the cold ice.
Golden used to get that. He would get snow on his hair in between his pads, and he'd start limping, and then you hold it, and it melts out, and then they go run around again. I mean, they have, like, no memory that it was bad.
Yes, totally. All right, I'm still troubleshooting here.
Does your dog fucking Bronco in the snow?
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
So it's still up. It says he's unavailable. This is very weird. In all our years, we've never had someone just fall off the availability like this. Hang on here. Restarted Skype. It gives me the chance to join call, but it just boots you out. Call into the... with your phone. Thanks for everybody standing by who's listening live, and for those of you who hear it on play, you'll know none of this happened. That's one of the fun parts about being live, you know.
Yeah.
You get, like, Sami Zayn found out.
By the way, the other night when you were minus 17, we were minus 10 up here. It was cold.
Yeah. Yep. I am not a complainer about weather. I just, you know, bundle up and make the best of it and enjoy the scenery and get out with my dog. Yeah, yeah. But you know, I mean, negative 17, it's tough. It's not, but
well,
it doesn't last.
Quite frankly, I'd rather have negative 17 than 95 with 100% humidity in Miami in the middle of summer. I've done both.
Yeah.
And I much prefer cold because you can just put more stuff on.
Yep. I totally am with you, and I've heard some people respond to our weather talk and agree with us on that.
Brandon?
Oh, I think Brandon's back. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, there we go.
Cool.
Yay, Brandon.
So did you...
I didn't kill you.
So I'm gonna throw this out as a warning. So I'm using my work computer because I work from home, and it's a Windows machine. Typically, I do this from my personal MacBook.
Good for you.
And this, I upgraded this machine to Windows 11. So I am going to blame Windows 11 for this.
All right. Hey, if you blame anything on Windows, I'm on board. It's a good default stand to take. All right, so did you hear Nick's scenario with Bailey? Because I do roll into the
big
call.
Yes, I did.
So go ahead and just reply to that. And no one will know any of the other stuff happened.
All right, perfect. So they won't hear my warning about Windows 11 then. That's fine.
Shoot, yeah. That's just for our live listeners.
Yeah. special edition. What I was going to say in regards to Bayley, it's a good idea if they plan to keep her heel, because I don't think that there is any other scenario where Bayley gets booed, because I think that people naturally like her. It's been a long time since she's been around. They sort of grew to love or at least respect that heel character because she was so good at it. So I think this is kind of a Triple H Royal Rumble 2002 situation, where if she just comes out for the match, she's going to get cheered. So I think that if they want her to remain a heel, that idea is probably one of the only ways to go about it.
All right, very good. Nick, any follow-up or anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just moving over to Roman and the whole situation. You had said way back right after day one that you had heard information that they just had to do some maneuvering and then they were going to get back on track. And I'm wondering if the maneuvering was Roman beat Brock at day one with Heyman's help, establishing that Heyman, they were working Brock a little bit. Big E wins, and you know, then whatever happens with Lashley and Big E and all that sort of stuff. Brock wins the Royal Rumble, and then they get to Brock Roman rematch at WrestleMania. And so I'm wondering if they have Lesnar lose to Lashley, enter the Rumble, and he can lose to Lashley with Heyman doing something. So it's not like he loses because Lashley's that much better than him. And then he enters the Rumble, wins, and then they're back on track. Lesnar reigns at WrestleMania. Lesnar can stay a babyface. Heyman's turn on Lesnar solidifies Roman as the heel, because, like, tonight, Roman sits there and goes, acknowledge me, and people are cheering. They're not booing anymore.
Yep.
And so this can reestablish Roman as more of a heel against the Lesnar that people like to like, and then they do whatever they do, whether they crown Lesnar at WrestleMania until SummerSlam or whatever. But, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the detour has been confusing, and we shouldn't have to work so hard to figure out what our emotions are supposed to be, and there should be less ambivalence when it comes to this on the part of the crowd, where they're, trying to figure out, of these two characters who have been heels, which one is less unlikable. I do think there's some pent-up desire to cheer Roman that's been building up over time because he's cool and not pandering. A lot of the things that caused fans to boo him before isn't there anymore. But Brandon, is there, respond to anything that Nick said in his presentation, was there a risk that fans will cheer Roman and not Brock, in part because of what's gone on with Seth, and that the detour actually kind of screw up what they might have wanted to do all along? Or do you think in Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, you have to trust that they'll figure this out and tell the story. And scenario-wise, just kind of Nick's layout of where you think the getting back to where we were going to be anyway, the check-in point after the Rumble, if that scenario makes sense.
I think it's possible that this detour has put them on a path of resistance in terms of getting the crowd to boo Roman Reigns. And I think it's something that they have to be really mindful of, because I do agree. I think that they're the tide is starting to turn a little bit. Roman Reigns is cool. He is the coolest character on the show by a pretty large margin. Although Brock Lesnar has become cool in his own right. I think Lesnar moving away from sort of the wind pants and the cutoff t-shirts and into what appears to be what I'd expect Brock Lesnar to wear on any given day, I think that has been a positive shift for that character and making him seem more authentic and more like he wants to be there and less like he is just this sort of corporate cutout big star who is only showing up for the payday. This is the most excited I've really ever seen Brock Lesnar to be working consistently in a WWE ring. And I think that fans recognize that, and it makes them naturally gravitate toward him. So I think that there are a few keys here to, or really one major key to getting the desired reaction. If the desired reaction is still that Roman Reigns is booed against a babyface Brock Lesnar, and that is getting Paul Heyman back to Roman Reigns. Because I think that with Paul Heyman at Brock Lesnar's side over on Raw, facing characters like Bobby Lashley, who, no disrespect, has done an incredible job at revitalizing his career and becoming a viable main eventer, he's not Roman Reigns, and he's not going to be largely cheered over Brock Lesnar. But when you have a Roman Reigns who does have sort of this built-up, pent-up, positive momentum, and the crowd does seem to want to cheer him, I think that they are going to naturally side against whichever of the two has the slimy, manipulative, annoying Paul Heyman. And that's why I think it's really important that Heyman realign himself with Reigns. And also, in doing so, Heyman needs to screw over Brock Lesnar in a pretty dramatic way, which makes Lesnar naturally more likable. And it also gives them, you know, like we just talked about, a reason to get the title off of Lesnar, have it make sense, have it not hurt Lesnar, and then have Brock just go on a rampage in the Royal Rumble. And the last thing that I'll say about that is just that I think in most other years, having Brock Lesnar enter the Royal Rumble unannounced, presumably by taking someone else's spot that he beats up on the way to the ring, would elicit a bit of a groan from people, because there are always dark horse underdog candidates that people perceive as more deserving or full-timers that they believe should get that Royal Rumble rub and get the WrestleMania main event. This is the one year in recent memory where I don't think they have that problem, where Brock Lesnar coming in, surprising everybody, tossing guys out, and winning the match would actually elicit a positive response and not receive backlash from people who think that their dark horse candidate should have won, because there are no dark horses this year.
Yeah, not with that groundswell of grassroots support where people will be disappointed if they don't get the winner that they want. I think there's dark horses that aren't realistic, that are just people's personal favorites or a pet idea. You know, I was right, I called it Austin Theory's
sure.
the winner, you know, whatever. But yeah, I get what you're saying. By the way, just as a sidebar, there should be a rule that there should not be a rule that you can beat somebody up on their way to the ring as an official entrance and replace them. I mean, I know it doesn't affect business in any tangible way, but it's so farcical. It's just, don't do that, WWE. I don't care what kind of story you want to tell. That shouldn't be a thing. That shouldn't, like, no, find a different way. And there's other ways you can do it. You know, someone can, you know, trip over a crate backstage and injured, and then Stone Cold is like, we need someone to be number 24. And then all of a sudden Brock Lesnar walks out of the locker room and goes, I will. I mean, that's better than, you know, Brock beating somebody up, like have an authority figure designate a replacement.
Wait,
that
you
would
know,
actually
just because you
really
said
funny.
That, they're going to do it three times.
Right.
They're going to do it three times in one
match. I hope they're not spite booking. Nick, what?
That would actually be so funny if that happened and Brock Lesnar kind of comes out all jovially and goes,
yep.
Yeah, I'll do it. You know?
Yep,
I mean, just
totally,
it would
yep.
be so against his character, you know. Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
No problem.
Well, he's so jovial now, too. Although I feel I'm a little on a bit of an island. I think Brock has been, like, too jovial, like, too peppy and perky. Like, he's not taking it seriously. And it's just teetering for me. I mean, I get that it's fun to see him have a joy of performance. But, you know, when you're saying, I don't even know who Bobby Lashley is, it's like when Charles Barkley said about the Timberwolves last night, oh, I've seen like two second halves of them this season. And now let me tell you about the team and what they need to do. And I'm going to watch the game. And then, you know, Ernie says, oh, you should be watching all the games. That's what you're paying for. He goes, no, I watch golf. Like, I'm sorry, but, you know, I don't, I mean, I know Brock's a rebel and all that, but I want the people who are like paid to be centerpieces of a panel show on the NBA to know the team they're covering and not flaunt how little they know. And I want Brock to not flaunt like how unseriously he takes this, that he doesn't even know who Bobby Lashley is. Now, the other argument is he's just trying to get under Bobby's skin. And if that's the case, you know, make that a little more clear, because Bobby, as you said, Brandon, has established himself really well, but I don't know that people are sure that Brock doesn't know who Bobby is, because Brock lives in Saskatchewan and on a farm, and he's in his own world, and he shows up on a jet and does his thing and then leaves. So I don't know. I just have I think they pushed it a little too far, and I want to actually see the game face on Brock, that he understands he's actually in for a hell of a fight, and that Lashley is a serious opponent, and I want Lesnar to care that he wins and retains his title and goes on to WrestleMania. Like, I want that attitude, and it sort of feels like he's just not taking anything seriously. So again, it's teetering for me.
I definitely get that point. I would like to see like sort of Lesnar almost give Lashley the rub, regardless of the outcome of the match, in the sense that he sort of acknowledges how much of a badass Lashley is. But I think that if we're going the direction that we've been talking about, in the sense that Heyman screws over Lesnar to get Lesnar in the Rumble match, I think in that case, you have to present Brock as too angry to really care.
Right.
So it's kind of hard.
Yeah, Nick, I'll throw my two. Do you want to respond to that?
Real
or bring
quick
up another
on, real quick on that. I mean, in this Lesnar run, yeah, it's great to see him doing something different. But I think he's been a little bit of a, I don't know if I can say it, you know, the D word.
A D-bag.
Okay, that's
that.
Good.
We can
say
that.
that.
I mean, we can probably say the other thing, but, you know, why
bother? Why take the chance? But just that it's kind of turned me off of him a little bit, you know. But two quick things, and then I'll get off. Did they say today that Big E is back on SmackDown?
Oh,
is that official?
Well, okay. I had the same reaction, Nick and Brandon, that everybody had to that, which is, what? Wait, what? That? How? Why? When did this become a thing? And then I thought, what if she just means, like, he's officially in a match tonight? Like, it's one of those brand exceptions, whatever they call that, you know, I wish they would make that clear. But, I mean, there were some rumors that they're just going to move him to SmackDown to fortify the brand while Drew was out with Jeff Hardy gone and King Xavier gone, that they just needed to fortify things and they just wanted to get Kofi back in tag teams. But, yeah, I mean, if Big E is permanently on SmackDown, and I understand that interpretation, I think it very well might be true, but I'm just throwing out there, it might not. It might be, you're officially on SmackDown. Doesn't it feel good? You get to be in a match this week, with the idea being Monday he's back on Raw. I'm hoping for that, but because the person who wants there to be logic and rules and structure to things, there should be a better explanation, just like why Seth, you know, suddenly on SmackDown just bouncing back and forth. And Cole had said, you know, Royal Rumbles, as if it's something that was established. Royal Rumble is the season when you get to, you know, wrestlers get to be on both shows. It's like, That's never been a thing, and suddenly it was always one brand crashing the other. I remember, you know, all the blue shirts attacking all the you know, Raw set and vice versa a few years ago. So it hasn't been a thing where, oh, that was Survivor Series, but it hasn't been a thing that's just like, oh yeah, anybody gets to be on anything. So Brandon, your thoughts.
That's Michael Cole corporate speak for, we fired too many people to fill two and three hours of television, so we got to share.
Yep.
I rolled my eyes at this, and if it is what you're saying, Wade, if it is just sort of a misspeak or the language that they used was very misleading. If what Kayla meant was to say that he was just officially on the show tonight for a match, I'm not ruling that out as a possibility at all, because, I mean, WWE, at the end of the day, does whatever they want, and there isn't really much thought put into this. But I also, you have to sort of acknowledge that they are so particular about the words used in the promos and about scripting their backstage announcers that it seems to me like there was emphasis. Kayla was emphasizing when she said, Big E is officially back on SmackDown. and yeah. it sort of felt definitive. So I took it the way I think you did initially.
WWE.com has Big E. I just checked the superstar profile page. He's still listed as a Raw wrestler. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I looked too.
Now, that could change any minute, especially if WWE's listening to us at this exact moment. But so we have that going for us if the goal is to not have some arbitrary, unexplained jump.
Yeah, I don't think it's confirmed by any means, but it certainly felt like that was the direction to me. And, man, if that is the case, give me something more. I mean, I'm not disagreeing that SmackDown desperately needs some names over there because it is rough. That show got gutted in the draft, and it's only gotten worse since then with the loss of Jeff Hardy and then the injury to Drew McIntyre. They are thin at all levels of the card, and so Big E is desperately needed. But I say that while also acknowledging the fact that, and granted, it's only one night, but they treated it like he was back in a tag team with Kofi Kingston. And that is certainly not where they need him if they're going to move him back over there.
Yeah, it could be the Xavier injury is worse than they're letting on, and he's going to be out longer. And they don't want, they want the New Day. You know, they need the New Day. But last point I wanted to make, and it's really building on something that Brandon had said, what I really miss with Roman, and it's not just Paul, at the beginning you had Jay, who would be constantly moving and sulking and stalking and skulking behind Roman, just kind of a live wire, ready to explode. And he was main event Jey Uso, but he was also, in that subservient kind of the hyena role behind Roman that added so much threat to Roman. And I so miss that so much. And with I'll let you guys talk.
Yeah,
I'll head out.
Great. Appreciate it, Nick. Good talking to you. Yeah, I mean, there used to be so much to look at with the Roman Reigns segment. There was so much to look at, and now it's just Roman. And I mean, that's not a bad thing, but I find myself studying Roman more, where before I was like darting around, how's Big E responding to Roman in this very, subservient, almost like a Yeah, he's just always scared that he's going to do the wrong thing and try to read every like a dog who just stares at the human, at its human, just being like, how do they feel? What's going on? What's going to happen next? And then Jay just totally pacing and worried. That is missing from the act. And, I mean, Roman's good alone, but, yeah, I do miss that.
Yeah, it's definitely a pronounced difference, and I think it is interesting that they eliminated Jimmy and Jay from the equation this weekend. I think that is by design to sort of slot Roman at least temporarily in the babyface role against Seth, because, I mean, without them to interfere, it's more likely that Roman just wins the match clean, and I think that's by design. I mean, what other purpose really do you have for taking Jimmy and Jay out of the equation other than to, put the impetus sort of for the crowd to cheer Roman over Seth. If Reigns doesn't have his traditional way of gaining a nefarious upper hand.
All right. We'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee next. Sean, good to hear from you. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
Well, Wade, first of all, I missed you last week, man. Missed you a lot. Brandon, good to talk to you. You're back. How are you, man?
Good, good. How are you?
Oh, doing well. Man, you guys have made so many great points. I don't know really what to add other than I'll kind of put some
Thanks, of my Sean, we'll talk to you next week,
stuff.
Then.
Right, I know. It's like, no.
Well, I mean, Justin and Ryan are waiting. We don't want to leave them. You got nothing to add. No, I'm joking. Go ahead, Sean.
No, I'll add a little bit. Nick's good to hear from you, man. Kyle, glad you're back. I will say something to what Mike was talking about earlier about, I think Sasha and Charlotte worked amazing 6 years ago. I mean, they're just as good now as they were 6 years ago. I mean, their match would be just as good now. I mean, their matches in 2016 were some of the best we've ever seen. I mean, they were great. So, I mean, they haven't really improved. They were just that good to begin with. So I don't think that really is a big deal for me. As far as the match is not too fresh for me. I mean, we would see where they go with it, but I mean, they'd be in their lanes where they should be. But I wanted to go to some other stuff really quick. Going back to Naomi Sonya once again, it was, the match was okay. Naomi, to me, my problem with Naomi, as much as I like her, as a, she seems like a really good person, she's just not very good in the ring. And I didn't care for the match. Sonya did her part really well, actually. I mean, she was annoying when she should have been. Naomi should have gone over. I like that. But I don't know. Where do you still think they're going with it? What did you think of the match? Where do you think they're going with this whole thing?
I didn't think the match quite made it to okay. I thought it was really clunky, to the point where I just wasn't watching it to be into the match. I was watching it to see what spot would obviously be called, who would be trying to get in the right position for the next move. Yeah, I mean, not everything was bad, but enough was bad that's kind of what I was just concentrating on. And obviously Sonya just hasn't had reps in front of a crowd at all. And Naomi's not, you know, not consistently good in the ring. So it didn't seem like for a storyline that's been built up for so long that we got much crowd interest until, I guess, the end. There were some people, you know, cheering visually. I don't trust the audio of WWE, but at least, you know, it seemed like people were happy to see her win. Brandon, what'd you think of this, a payoff, I guess, to this long, long running storyline that still doesn't really have a clear genesis?
Yeah, a few different things here. When they first started this story, which I guess was 150-something days ago, according to Naomi, which it seems kind of crazy, but I guess in hindsight it sort of makes sense because it does feel like it's been going on for a long, long time. I was fascinated and intrigued by where they could go with this. And I thought for a bit there that the plan may have been that Naomi was going to feel so slighted by the fact that she moved over to SmackDown and then couldn't get booked, that she was going to work her way into the bloodline to prove that she was worth a spot. And I don't necessarily know that that would have been for better or for worse, because without question, there is a disparity in talent between the three members of the bloodline and Naomi. But I do think that Naomi being involved with her husband, with his brother, with his cousin, would have been interesting. It would have brought a new dynamic to her character. It would have brought her into a role we haven't seen her play in many, many years. I do think that the Glow character is a little played out. I get that she still elicits some reaction from the crowd, but not enough that I think that taking the risk of seeing what she could do as a heel outweighs, you know, what she's currently providing on the babyface side of the roster. When they went in a different direction and it became just a straightforward Naomi wanting to prove herself and Sonya sort of almost comically to the point of parody holding her down for seemingly no reason at all, I thought that it dragged out. This match then sort of like sprung up out of nowhere. It's like they were at each other's throats for so long, and then sort of the match just materialized on a SmackDown. And I get that they, you know, they confirmed it before the show, but still, like you said, Wade, I don't think that the result was very good. The match was very, very clunky. I'm not sure that I would have expected anything more given Naomi's relatively limited ability in the ring and Sonya just being so rusty. I mean, there's just so much time off there. I think Sonya proved herself to be a capable worker. I don't think she's in the top echelon of female wrestlers in WWE, but she's certainly better than a number of wrestlers that they have in that division. But she was definitely rusty, and you can't really blame her. It's been a long time since she's worked a match, and it wasn't short either. So, I mean, it was a lot to ask for her first match back. So wasn't a big fan of the match itself. I do think that Naomi winning was the right move. But I do think that it heightened my interest in seeing Sonya become a full-time wrestler again, if only because I think she will improve. I think that she'll be able to shake the rust off. And the division just really needs her. They need bodies, and they need women who, you know, have had decent matches in the past and can be credible. And Sonya has established herself as a pretty solid heel within that division, albeit in a non-wrestling role. So I think she'd be a good addition to that division full time, or at least on a more consistent regular basis. And that might be the direction that they're headed in, with her entering the Royal Rumble. So I thought that part at least was overall a net positive. And one last thing I'll add about this segment in particular that had nothing to do with the match itself, but rather pointing out the commentary situation in WWE right now.
Yeah.
Michael Cole just completely miscalling Sonya Deville's like suplex front faceplant move. I don't know what the move is called. I don't know.
It looks like your opponent's hurting you, but you're hurting your opponent. Yeah, that's what it's called.
But clearly Sonya immediately goes for the pin. So she is on offense. And Michael Cole says it looks like a DDT, which is correct. It did look like a DDT. However, how did you let that escape your mouth?
I know.
And, I mean, credit to Pat McAfee. And I, you know, Pat McAfee does deserve some of the criticism he gets, unquestionably. But he seems like the most knowledgeable commentator that they have right now in terms of calling pure wrestling moves. And that's crazy.
Yes, I know. Good point. All right, let me throw back to Sean if you want to follow up on that or anything else.
Yeah, I did like that Naomi did seem kind of genuine after the match, which I kind of liked. It seemed just genuine and real, and I like that. Going back to – and I thought Pat was better tonight, by the way. I thought he was a lot better. Going back to – just a quick tag with Nakamura and Boogs. I'm tired of them already. I'm getting tired of them. What are they? I mean, Rick Boogs is strong, but other than that, what else do they see in him? I just don't know what they see in him right now, other than he's just a big guy that can do a bunch of power moves. I you know, it's fine, I guess, for what it is. It's not awful or anything. I just don't know. What do you think they see in him? Do you think they're going anywhere with him at some point? What do you think's in the future, maybe for him?
Yeah, Brandon, they seem to like Boogs. They seem to like Madcap Moss. It fits, you know, the current creative team and their vision for the main roster and what a WWE superstar looks like. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they both come out of that cookie cutter mold. If you swap them next week, I don't know if I'd notice. I mean, if you just told me that Madcap Moss was Rick Boogs, I believe you. I mean, they're just sort of the same guy doing the same sort of stuff, just playing slightly different roles. I mean, there's nothing that stands out about either of them. I think that it's pretty clear that Vince loves the charisma, if you want to call it charisma, of Rick Boogs when he introduces Shinsuke Nakamura. He annoys me too. I mean, I think he drags Nakamura down as much as Nakamura is sort of already in the pit. Despite being Intercontinental Champion, which I know that this has been brought up on the show before, but I forgot the exact number. So I went ahead and looked it up as I was watching that match. Shinsuke Nakamura has not defended the Intercontinental title on television since September 24th. That is his only title defense since winning the title. And even I figured, okay, they must be defending the title on the limited house shows that they're running, right? I mean, like the Intercontinental title used to be a perfect title to have on the line on house shows. I mean, you knew that wasn't going to change hands, but it's the workman's belt. You can get it in a good semi-main event spot, right? And granted, they are running limited house shows. But he hasn't even defended the title at a house show since October 11th.
Wow.
I mean, they're just essentially saying the title doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's not good. I mean, it's noticeable, but when you actually put dates on it, it feels a lot worse. And, I mean, yeah, just if he can't, yeah, it's frustrating.
I mean, Sami Zayn talking about it. At least,
I think Sami Zayn
is the first wrestler to talk about the Intercontinental title in months. So,
and he still owes me a title shot. Well, make a bigger deal out of that. I'd rather have you be IC champ, and you can defend against Johnny Knoxville next month. I don't care on SmackDown.
I mean, I think that if they get the title on Sami Zayn, which seems to be the direction that they'll likely head. It's pretty clear with Sami signing the new deal and the TV time that he gets, Vince McMahon really likes that character. So I think that if they get the title on Sami Zayn, at least it'll be talked about because Sami gets to run his mouth every week.
Yes. Yep. All right, Sean, anything else for us?
Well, first, I just wanted to kind of talk about, you know, what I'm thinking for the Rumble, and then I'll get off. Simon got to really talk about it much on air. I'm thinking with Big E with Kofi, that unless they're just saying, oh, well, look at Big E with Kofi, and then they're going to surprise you with him winning, I just don't feel comfortable with him winning now. I just feel like they've got him at a bad place, and I'm leaning Lashley beating Brock in the title match and then having Brock win the Rumble. That's kind of what I'm thinking they might do right now. I think there's a lot of good possibilities, yeah, but that seems like the most likely in my scenario. And then for the women, I'm definitely leaning Bayley coming back and winning just because the fans are going to love it. Even if she's heel, they're going to love it initially. And then if she stays in the heel role, she'll do a good job getting them back against her. I mean, I love her as a baby face, but I think they'll get to that in due time. I think that'll be fine. And Wade, I want to say all your coverage with Todd on the Fix. If you're not VFT guys, again, you have to do it. The Fix with Todd was great. The preview with Sam Roberts was awesome. Sam just always, I love his insight on wrestling. Even if I don't agree with her, I think it's weird. I love his reasoning for why he thinks the way he does. And he has good in-depth reasons why. Like he says why he thinks that way. And so, you know, I loved it. All the coverage was great. I'm excited. I won't be able to watch the Rumble live, so I'm going to have to avoid hearing anything and go back and watch it later on when I get home Saturday night. But I'm excited about it. It should be a good show. Wade, appreciate all you do, man. Brandon, always good to talk to you, man. Thanks for taking my call, as always.
Great. Thanks, Sean. Always great. I appreciate the kind words, too, right here from you. And, yes, well, stay spoiler-free. You don't stay off your phone. You don't want to know what happens. All right, Perry. Very good. We will move on here to Justin. And I believe this is Justin in Charlotte. Justin, what do you think of SmackDown tonight and the final Rumble Heights?
Personally, I thought it was an okay show. I was very impressed by Seth Rollins' promo tonight. I have been known as not being a huge Seth Rollins fan, but, you know, his promo I felt was strong. And I kind of look at that Raw brand and I don't really see Brock Lesnar as champion being a long-standing thing because we know it was like a last-minute thing. And I'm just wondering what Seth Rollins being a top guy on that Raw brand might look like right now because we know Raw's not doing well with the attendance and the ratings. Even without football this week, they're up a little bit, but they wasn't up much. I just wonder what he's doing right now and the character he has, what kind of impact do you think he could have as the top guy on the brand going into WrestleMania?
Brandon, what do you think?
With Seth Rollins or are we still or
Seth, yeah. Right, okay. Justin, Seth?
Yes, Seth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's, yep.
Yeah, so I wasn't super high on the promo tonight. I thought that he leaned too heavily into that super obnoxious laugh. I get why he does it. I get why he does it, but I think sometimes he goes overboard with it. Tonight, it felt like he was very clearly going for like the Joker. He even brought it up in his promo. I mean, he made reference to the joke. So I think he was very much playing into that tonight, and that might have been why he went so heavy on the laugh.
Real quick, Brandon, remember you thought on the Joker thing, like if you – and I know Seth isn't going to be, you know, up for Academy Awards for this performance or Emmys on a TV standpoint, but the nuance of the Joker, there's a range, you know, like the facial expressions. They take you on this adventure, and Seth doesn't. You know, he's just sort of this one-dimensional caricature of somebody being obnoxious. And so if he's channeling the Joker, I want to see him show more range. I want him to get, like, really sad and then unexpectedly shock you with this, you know, zany look followed by clear disappointment followed by, you know, whatever. Like, it just – his emotion is just, let me be obnoxious, ha, 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 ha. And that's not – he might think that's a Joker because he's dressed up weird and laughing, but – Watch the damn movie and get inspired and show some range then. Okay, yeah, I just had to insert that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Joker is at its core a deeply, deeply deranged person who can put on the front of being sort of well kept and put together.
But he's always on the verge of not.
Right, and no matter what, it always seeps out. It seeps out in the end. And with Seth, it's like he knows that and he acknowledges it, but he can't quite get to that level, or the material doesn't allow him to quite get to that level. And I think what's interesting watching Seth tonight is that earlier this week, so I typically start my mornings with a workout, and I'll put on Good Morning Football on NFL Network in the morning. And a couple of days ago, Seth Rollins was on the show. I had no idea that he was appearing. It just, they welcomed him, and I was like, oh, okay. And I popped my headphones out, turned the TV up. So here's the thing, like, In a situation like that, and he was there straight up to hype the Rumble. I mean, they asked him football questions. Seth is a diehard NFL fan, huge, huge Chicago Bears fan, and he can talk football all day. He's very, very knowledgeable, and he's very, very likable in that role. I mean, he was wearing a ridiculous suit. He was playing his part, but it was toned down. He had more control over it. And he came off like a guy that you would want to hang out with. I mean, straight up, a guy that you would want to be your friend. Like, he was charismatic. He was very knowledgeable about everything that they asked him about. And it didn't seem, if it was prepped, it didn't seem prepped. It felt off the cuff. He loved talking about football. He was able to not only talk about the Bears, but about the matchups the prior weekend, the matchups coming up this weekend. He seemed to be enjoying himself. He slipped into the character a little bit when they asked him questions about the Rumble and about him being superior to Roman Reigns. But he came off like a naturally likable star. And it made me wonder so much why his babyface runs never translate. Because he's a likable dude.
Yeah, that's interesting. How would you produce him? What would you say?
I guess it's just like, I guess that'd be like, Seth, watch your segment on Good Morning Football. Act like that. I mean,
yeah,
like,
no, sometimes it's that simple. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really that simple. He was confident. He, you know, presented himself in a way where he truly believed that he's better than Roman Reigns. He sold it as a big match in the sense that he said that, you know, Roman Reigns is the biggest star on SmackDown. I see myself as the biggest star on Monday Night Raw. It's the two brands colliding. It's these two Goliaths colliding for the richest prize in WWE, and it's all kicking off the road to WrestleMania. It just, he knew what to say, and he said it in a way that was effective and made him seem confident but not cocky. It was a babyface promo.
It would be just nice to see WWE incorporate more of what, like, natural human charisma instead of cartoonized over the top caricatures of, you know, sports entertainers. Like, it would be I don't know how you can transition into that, or if you just, you know, do it with a few more wrestlers, but having some grounded people who are relatable, who just kind of, you know, you see them in this atmosphere, and you see it on Talking Smack and Raw Talk too, where it's like, yeah, that version, like, that I would totally relate to that person. I'd buy that t-shirt. I'd pay to see them. I'd root for them. I relate to them. I admire them. And instead you're given these, you know, so often one-dimensional caricatures of, you know, I mean, Happy Corbin, Baron Corbin probably could play like a real, like, normal human being as a heel or a face, but they just don't trust that. Everything has to be so scripted and put on. And it's a shame, you know, because I think there is a way to work that in and still have WWE still be WWE. If there were more exceptions to, you know, Vince McMahon's rule of, we've got to boil everybody down to a catchphrase and some sort of over-the-top caricature.
I just think, it's definitely interesting, too, that as I was watching that segment and seeing how likable he was coming off, I sort of wondered for a minute, like, you know, WWE is the one that ultimately greenlights these appearances for the most part on these morning shows. Why didn't they send Roman? I mean, Roman's a football guy.
Yeah.
I mean, why wasn't it him? Why was it Seth instead, who's supposed to be the heel in this match? It's just, you know, it's strange how sort of how they send people to certain places and how they dictate that they present themselves too. I mean,
yeah.
Seth could have talked about the Bears and talked about football, but then slipped into the slimy heel, and he didn't do that.
Yeah. All right, Justin, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I just happen to like the promo. I mean, the obnoxiousness is annoying, but I just felt certain points he hit when he was going at Roman that upset Roman, obviously. I just thought it was good points that he made from just beyond the heel babyface dynamics between their relationship and all the history they had. I just felt like he had some strong points to Roman, and Roman obviously got physical about it, but another thing that I want to talk about is maybe I'm just alone here, but, you know, all this Bayley love, I mean, you know, she's part of the Four Horsewomen. I get that. I get she's a good wrestler, but I thought that the character was super annoying. And, you know, I'm just not really understanding the fanfare. Maybe it's, you know, the fact she's been gone so long, but I just look at this Women's Rumble and I just hear the names people bringing up, Sasha and Bayley and, you know, Ronda Rousey, and I guess I'm alone here, but I'm just not excited with any of those names. And maybe it's the fact that every year the Rumble comes and there's no real new names. We got a new name last year with Bianca, but it feels like the same people being brought up. And I'm like, yeah, Sasha would be cool, but wasn't she in the main event of WrestleMania last year? Or this person would be, Charlotte would be cool, but didn't she win 2 years ago? And it's like, they have exactly 1 year from every Rumble to build people up, and it just seems like in both Rumbles, it just seems like it's, you know, pick a name that we've put on television for the last 4 years, and one of them would win. And I'm intrigued more than I'm excited. But, you know, I watched the opening segment, and, you know, it's, you know, with Charlotte, and I'm just thinking – maybe she would win, but is that exciting? Is Sasha Banks excited? It's just, I'm more intrigued with excitement.
Sure. Let me jump in, Justin.
Yeah.
Let me jump in on that. Because Brandon, you talked earlier, you know, Sasha Charlotte doesn't feel fresh, even if they do it. You can, you know, have people go on different journeys and cross paths again. If it's long enough and they're big stars, that's fine. But I mean, WWE, I think ought to be cognizant of the idea that people like Justin are out there who want new rising stars and truly fresh matchups that don't just feel like it's out of nowhere. Now, they might say, well, Shotzi came to the ring and there's Aaliyah. You know, we're trying. You know, we tried with Liv Morgan. What could they do better to satisfy Justin where somebody's really ready, like to be seen and presented and believably seen by viewers as a threat to move into the top echelon with Bayley and Becky and Charlotte and Sasha and Bianca. And I guess Alexa Bliss, you know, would be the top six in terms of kind of the legacy names in that division.
Yeah. I don't mean to be dismissive or make a joke out of it, but I mean, literally, I think at the end of the day, the answer is just to not cut half of your roster and treat them like they were nobodies when you brought them in. I mean, they're in a really tough position this year because the rosters are so thin and they've spent so little time building new talent up that largely we're looking at largely the same roster that we had last year, just less than. So, I mean, it's hard to get excited about anybody when nobody has been put in a position to succeed. And the people that are succeeding and have been put in those positions have already been there and have already done that. It's very, very hard to get really excited about there being fresh faces to win these matches because none of these faces are fresh. I mean, they've been there before. They've done it before. So, yeah, I don't think you're alone, Justin, at all. I definitely would fall under the category of being more intrigued than excited. I definitely think that the women's side is a bit more interesting than the men's, simply because on the men's side, it really is. It's Brock Lesnar and who else? And Lesnar's not even advertised for the match. I mean, we're just guessing that he's going to make an appearance and end up winning the thing just by process of elimination, because who's left other than Lesnar? I think that the women's side is more interesting because you can make valid cases for several women. I think that you can make a legitimate case for Charlotte. I think you can make one for Bianca Belair, for Sasha Banks, for returning Bayley, for returning Ronda Rousey. So that's several women that you can honestly make a legitimate case out of. And I think that's why it's intriguing, not so much that it's going to be a new face or a fresh face winning the Rumble, than it is just, we just don't know for once. And, and a lot of times it is painfully obvious who's going to win. So I do think it's intriguing in that respect, but I completely agree. I still look forward to the Royal Rumble every year because I think the match is fun and it's exciting and it's entertaining and it's interesting to talk about. It's fun and interesting to watch. Certainly doesn't feel like it did when I was growing up or even in my teenage years, where I went into that, to the Rumble every year, thinking that, all right, this is the opportunity to make a new star or to cement a new star, someone who is on the up and up, who is upcoming. I mean, I think back to some of those wins in the 90s with Stone Cold before he had really hit his peak. And then you get into the early 2000s, you know, with winners like Chris Benoit, and then with Rey Mysterio. Like, those were very interesting. They were in some cases predictable, but that didn't matter because it was exciting that these guys were up and coming and getting their opportunity. And it doesn't feel like we get a lot of that anymore. And when we do get it, it usually ends some way in disappointment. And that's unfortunate.
Justin, I'll throw it back to you for any closing words or final thoughts.
Yeah, I totally agree with Brandon. You know, you don't want to be so pessimistic about things, but, you know, I was thinking about the Royal Rumble this morning, and it's just like, am I excited for it or am I intrigued by it? Last thing I want to touch on is this whole Ronda Rousey thing. You know, it's been rumored, it's been reported by some fairly reputable sites, but I just wonder, for instance, let's say Royal Rumble comes, the woman Royal Rumble comes, and number 30 hits, and it's not Ronda Rousey. Are we seeing the 2015 situation or 2014 situation? I mean, are these reports really putting this match towards the end in a bad situation if she doesn't show up? Because it was never confirmed that she's actually in the match or actually going to be at the event. It's just speculated more than anything. So what do you guys think about that? Like, somebody comes out at 30 and they're booed, or – you know, it's a disappointment. It kind of sours the match. What do you guys think about that? That's my last question.
Sure. Thanks, Justin. Appreciate the call. Yeah, Brandon, I mean, if Ronda doesn't come out, there's going to be disappointment. The crowd will be deflated. If number 30 is announced and Aaliyah runs out, she's going to just be, you know, booed forever. I mean, it might be good for WWE to have, like, the final couple entrants be obvious names that haven't come out yet who were announced if Ronda's not there, so that it's not – because you don't want someone who's not announced and hoping to get a nice reception who then comes out and everybody's resentful it's not Ronda. I mean, it's a tough situation. If they didn't put the rumor out there and Ronda's not there, it's not WWE's fault, but it is now their problem.
Yeah. Do you get the sense that this rumor has sort of, like, permeated every sort of nook and cranny of the type of fan that's going to be at the show? Like, do you get the sense that it's a big rumor?
I was gonna ask you that, and then I kind of thought, I do think it has.
Okay.
Because
I'm not
100%. It's hard. I can't pretend to know. It's like Twitter is not the universe, and
right.
A lot of people who buy tickets to the Royal Rumble are not listening to this show or reading, you know, website rumors and stuff. So, I mean, there's a certain percentage we're going to go to that show as casual fans and have no idea.
Sure.
But is that 10% or 40%? I don't know, probably closer to 10, maybe right in the middle, maybe around, you know, 80, maybe 20 some percent won't have heard of it. That'd be my guess, but it might be closer to 100 at this point. I just, people who go to the Rumble, maybe they are following something you know, somewhere, or they have friends. So
I don't have a clear sense one way or another. And I'm also not sure, like I haven't been tracking or don't know if this information has been made public or put out there, but I don't have a strong sense as to whether or not this show is sort of like a big destination show. Like if there's going to be a lot of travel in, or if it's going to be largely contained to the St. Louis area. I mean, WWE presents it as a big event and obviously it's in a stadium. So you would think that there would be some level of fly in as there is for all these shows, but I haven't gotten a sense if it's going to be, you know, at the level of WrestleMania being a fly in show. So I think that the higher the number that is, the more likely it becomes that number of people knowing about the rumor is pushing 100%. But I think the other thing to keep into consideration is that there will be fans who are made privy to it the day of just by being around and overhearing conversations and talking to fans in the venue. So I think that more people will find out as the day progresses. But I don't know. I coming into the night, like I was aware of it, but I have been thinking more about the Bayley return than the Ronda return because the Bayley return just feels so obvious to me based on the way things that she's been posting on social media, the timeline sort of working. It just seems like she's as close to a lock as it gets. So Bayley shows up. I think that Bayley showing up will be enough for them not to turn on the match. If neither Bayley or Ronda is there and they spilled the beans on Sasha tonight, then I think they're headed into some murky territory.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. We'll wrap up our calls with Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome. What do you think of SmackDown?
It was a nice show into the Royal Rumble. Question on the video package, they said about an unlimited amount of surprises. Is there anyone from AEW that has a contract that has expired that we could possibly see that would be a nice surprise? Or is it possible anyone will be backstage, such as a Daniel Bryan cheering on his wife, such as what The Undertaker is doing at this event?
Yeah, I don't think any big names. I don't think Tony would let any big names contract come up and show up. I also don't think WWE wants to have an AEW wrestler show up in the Rumble as if WWE is acting like that's a big deal, because that's WWE saying, "Oh, we're in a war, and now you guys got Christian and Dean and Jericho and Bryan, but now we got wrestler X." Like you don't want the Mark Mero type acquisition when WWE was back, you know, competing with WCW and like, oh, you know, we got Mark Mero now, Johnny B. Badd's here. So I just don't think a big enough name would do it. I don't think WWE would want that distracting from what they're doing. And certainly no one under contract is going to be there. So my thinking is WWE doesn't want to give AEW that much credibility to acknowledge it. I'm surprised they let Edge and I mean, I guess Seth acknowledging Mox was kind of weird. Instead of Dean, but you know, for the most part, I think WWE wants to pretend AEW doesn't exist, and I don't think they're looking to score any points with anybody by, you know, being forthright about that company existing. So, what do you think?
Justin? Yeah, I think. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I go ahead, Brandon. I was looking at Justin on the switchboard as I said that, and my mind took over.
I think that they, based on the comments that we've heard higher ups in WWE make with regard to AEW, I think that they view themselves as such a completely different product altogether, even if the reality is they're both presenting professional wrestling. As much as WWE doesn't want to admit that, it is the simple truth. Even if it's derivative, it's still wrestling. I think that they're so far removed from acknowledging that they are presenting the same thing and they are in competition in some way, that I just think that they would assume to pretend that they don't exist, and those guys are there and they do what they do and they have all this blood and we do not.
Ryan, anything else for us?
And how about, like, to the other point of that question is, like, how far is the the vibe between AEW? Are, like, wrestlers allowed to, like, show up just to, like, cheer on, like, their significant other? Or is that, like, against their policy, you know, like Daniel Bryan showing up to cheer on his wife because she doesn't wrestle a whole lot?
Bryan can go. If WWE is – Bryan Danielson and Vince McMahon like each other. They get along. If Bryan shows up with his wife, they're going to let him in the building, I think, pretty strongly. I don't think they think Brian's like a secret spy who's going to be like, oh, things have changed, and I'm going to tell Tony about this secret thing WWE's doing. But I don't think they want a camera on him. I don't think they want him filming himself backstage. I think Brian would have the instinct of the decorum that he should lay low and act like he's a guest and doesn't have the run of the place and stick near his wife. But, yeah, I mean, I think that'd be fine, and word would get out, and that'd be a big deal. My hunch is, you know, Brian wouldn't do that because, you know, I just don't think you'd want to make news in that way. But I don't know. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, certainly I don't think that Tony would care. I don't think that AEW would mind if wrestlers want to go there. I know that there is at least, you know, at least for the internet's sake, there was some animosity when Charlotte Flair was backstage at AEW to support Andrade. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't seem like that's something that WWE wants specifically, but I also have a hard time siding with the company in that regard, because if wrestlers are on their free time, then they should be able to go wherever they want, so long as they're not appearing on an opponent's television show. I mean, so I don't know. I don't get the sense that there would be any reason to suspect that Brian would not be allowed there. I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, he has a good relationship with Vince McMahon. He left the company on good terms. He still has a lot of positive relationships within the company. So yeah, I mean, I would think if he wants to be there, there's no reason he couldn't be.
Ryan, anything else for us?
Another question I had was on Naomi. Do you think Sonya's do something in the Rumble to abuse her power, like giving her like a low number, like one or two, so she has like no shot of winning the Rumble?
I don't think Sonya has a shot to win the Rumble. She's not going to lose to Naomi and then win the Rumble and headline WrestleMania. So, but could she
That's
use the chicanery as? Oh, what'd you say, Ryan?
I said that they would make Naomi number one, so she would have no shot at winning the Rumble, like abuse her
power. I got that backwards. Gotcha. Oh, I see. Okay. My mistake for not hearing or listening well. I was actually kind of thinking that was going to be her announcement to Naomi. Yeah, like, I'm going to make you number one in the Rumble. They didn't really get into that. Like, I'll add to Ryan's question, too, as I throw to you, Brandon. Do you like when they reveal numbers where there's tumblers and they show some people getting their numbers, or do you like it being a complete mystery? Because it's weird, the rules, it's sort of like the draft. The rules just change year to year, and they don't really feel the need to explain it to us.
I don't mind either way. I think that there are cases for both. If they don't have any major stories they're trying to tell headed into the Rumble for participants that are going to then feud outside of the Rumble, then I don't really have any issues with them not revealing numbers. And by the same token, if they do have stories that they know they want to tell, like, for example, if they want someone to, you know, kind of run the gamut, be in the match for a long time, I have no problem with them being announced as number one or two in advance. I also don't have a problem with, and actually quite like, when they have some sort of match in advance to determine the number 30 slot, as long as the match makes sense. And the reason I don't mind that is because it sort of eliminates the possibility for major disappointment and like complete turn of the crowd. I mean, if you know in advance who's coming out last, then, you know, you sort of save yourself in that regard. Although
bounces down to 29.
It does put that sort of that issue out there. But I don't mind when they do stuff like that. But I also don't mind when they don't. I think it works either way. As for Sonya tonight, I thought that her promo, it felt a little off, and Sonya almost seemed to know it was off when she delivered it, because saying that as punishment to Naomi for winning the match, she herself is going to enter the Royal Rumble. I mean, why should Naomi really care? I mean, Naomi just beat her. So why can't she just throw her out in the Rumble. I mean, it's not a big deal. So I think it would have made a lot more sense if you know, she said something like, I'm making you number one and I'm going to be number 30. I mean, or even just declaring Naomi as number one. I mean, that's much more heelish. And it also makes sense as her method of revenge.
Ryan, any closing words from you?
The only other comment I have is I was sort of surprised that they mentioned Bob Backlund and Pedro Morales tonight, because it seems like a lot of times they forget about their history and don't mention it.
Yeah, what was the context? I heard their names, Brandon. I didn't catch what the context of bringing those names up was.
I didn't either. I heard it. I definitely heard it, but it escaped me too.
Yeah, Ryan, what was the context when they brought them up?
The context was that these three people, Hulk Hogan, Pedro, and Bob Backlund, had all held the WWF title longer than Roman Reigns, and those were the only ones.
Oh, interesting. So they brought the other belt history into it. Okay, cool. Yeah. I don't know what that means. It may, you know, it'd be a long reign if Roman beats them.
What that says to me more than anything else is because they typically don't like acknowledging like the linear history of the titles. Like they tend to talk about Roman Reigns' run as Universal Champion like strictly in terms of the Universal title, as if that's the only title that exists. And for them to move away from that in any capacity, I think it's just them positioning Reigns as being on those guys' level. I think it's just a means of really trying to put Roman over to say like, hey, not only in the history of the Universal title, but in the history of ever, this is where Roman Reigns sits.
All right, Ryan, always great topics. Appreciate it.
Okay, and I forgot to mention, they also mentioned Bruno. But, thanks for taking my call.
What did you say? I'm sorry. You what?
They mentioned also Bruno. I forgot that when I told you that.
Oh, good.
That he had told.
I'm glad you clarified that, because when we're talking about long title reigns, his is the king. Yeah, yep. Great. Have a great weekend, and enjoy the Rumble tomorrow. Ryan.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
You bet. We'll talk to you next time. Okay, we're running along. I'm going to read this one email from Joe before we wrap up here. Joe from New York says, not sure if WWE was going for this, but the closing segment with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, Roman looked like he was unsure of himself. He looked like a guy who believed most of what Rollins was saying. Even when he got mad, Roman just shoved Rollins, and he didn't talk all badass or get mean. Roman looked like the kid on the playground who was being put in his place. Let's go back and look at Roman's face. It looked the same way it did that night he forgot his lines with Cena in the ring. That's not the way a champion should ever look. I'm sure WWE was trying to get us to believe Rollins could win, but Roman looked weak in this segment. He didn't look like the guy who was the top guy in the company. It's another aspect of my thoughts on Roman kind of being out there alone, but he did look kind of insecure, like he was irritated that what Seth was saying might be true, but it didn't manifest in a way that felt like, okay, that's motivating me. I think it was, as Joe wrote, trying to make it believable going into Saturday night, which I'm in favor of, that Seth actually has a chance, that he might be the guy who has Roman's number when a lot is on the line. The question is that worth it in exchange for the image we had of Roman and the music and Heyman and the lackeys and everything coming out of the Thunderdome era? Is it worth it to build up tomorrow night's match to do that?
I don't know that it is. And I might change my mind after we see the outcome and where Reigns goes from here. If he pivots into a feud with Brock Lesnar and he's got Heyman back at his side and the Usos back at his side, all may be forgiven. But a couple of things, and I'm glad that you read that email, because it reminded me of something I wanted to talk about in relation to Reigns. First of all, I think that the sort of the perception that Rollins is almost beneath Reigns, I think that the one area that they really played up tonight that worked to their benefit was that idea that Rollins has been the one to consistently beat Roman. I thought that throughout this feud has been sort of the one leg that they had to stand on in terms of turning this into any sort of like mega main event, because it's just the simple truth. Rollins has had Roman's number. So to that effect, I do think that it helped their cause tonight. But in regards to Reigns looking a little unconfident, I think that what hurt Roman more than anything else tonight was his giving in and acknowledging Seth's mentioning of the chair shot. Because heel badass Roman Reigns, head of the table, tribal chief Roman Reigns, should view himself as being superior to the Shield. Reigns should view the Shield as being far in his rearview mirror. He has surpassed the highest heights of the Shield as longest reigning Universal Champion, as, again, head of the table, all these monikers, whatever you want to throw at Reigns. He is unquestionably bigger than the Shield at this point. So why then would this character still be bothered by a chair shot that happened 7 years ago? To me, Roman Reigns should have shrugged that off. He should have just said, you know, that bothered me for a long time. I don't care anymore. And it's not because I've forgiven you. It's because I'm just better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't do that.
Yeah.
It actually got to him.
It's interesting they chose that direction, and I'm curious if the way they tell the story and what plays out at the Rumble itself explains it, you know, or if this was, you know, or if it, I hope it's not disconnected. If Seth is going to win and there's this idea that Roman can beat everybody but Seth, and they then use that to revisit it later, okay, that might explain some of why they did this, or yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting. All right, Joe also says, I'm glad Sasha Banks is back. She missed a lot of ring time over the last few years. Last year, she took 4 months off after WrestleMania and then missing SummerSlam and now getting hurt. Enough is enough. It's time to go to work and do what you do. Sasha did the same thing a few years ago. She missed 4 months after WrestleMania when she was unhappy with her booking. Sasha needs to win the Rumble, win back the title in this week division. Banks should be at the top of the card with this current women's roster, not just on the card. She's in her prime, and she's underperforming. So, Brandon, would you like to see her just take over and be clearly a centerpiece top act for a while? And just, I mean, because I think people would look forward to seeing Sasha wrestle on TV more and at their premium live events, doing, you know, like consistently having like match of the night type performances and helping elevate other stars. I think they'd like to see that. A lot of people would like to see that more than Charlotte or some other alternatives.
Yeah, I'm fine with that, and I would certainly welcome it. I think that there has been some question in recent months, and I think to some extent rightfully so, about the level of dedication that Sasha yep. still has to the company. And that's not to say that, you know, she's lazy or anything like that. She's still very clearly one of the most talented wrestlers that they have, but she's also seeing that she can make money elsewhere and it probably hurts a lot less. And she's got a lot of bumps on the bump card already at a young age. She works hard. She works a hard style. She bumps hard. She sells hard, and at times to her detriment. And I think that she's quickly realizing that there is a lot of life for her after pro wrestling. And I don't know. I don't want to go as far as to say that she has one foot out the door, but this may be one of the last opportunities they have to put her on a front and center full-time run. So if she's healthy and she's committed, then absolutely. I think that there's very few, perhaps no one better than Sasha Banks to run with at the top of the women's division and quite possibly near the top of SmackDown. I mean, second maybe only to Roman Reigns, regardless of the role that he's in. I think you're absolutely right. People would prefer to see that over Charlotte Flair. I certainly would prefer to see that over Charlotte Flair. As talented as Charlotte is, I think that she has overstayed her welcome as champion. I think she's had too many reigns. I think that at this point, there are more interesting stories for Charlotte to tell on the undercard and away from the title for a while, because the number of title reigns that she's had have piled up to a point of parity. It's not really – and you can see that they even – see that to some extent. Granted, there were ulterior motives to no longer including her NXT championship runs in her total, but that served, at least in my opinion, two purposes. One, to distance NXT from the main roster in terms of, you know, the black and gold NXT, but also to tamper down the number of title reigns that she has on her resume, because it was quickly reaching the point of parity. So I think that it would be wise to get her away from the title for a while. And in order to do that, you have to have a stable, committed, and talented champion. And that's Sasha Banks.
Excellent. Brandon, we'll wrap up there unless there's anything else you want to add from the show we didn't cover.
The only other thing that I wanted to mention, and this is super quick, but man, the Viking Raiders, ridiculous voices with the Usos backstage. I want to like the Viking Raiders so much. They're super talented in the ring. They should be mainstays in this tag division. They need teams that are credible, and the Viking Raiders have an interesting look. They have size. They can move. They can create movement for guys that are smaller than them, which is not something that you can say for a lot of large guys in WWE. And yet, I cannot like them, and I cannot take them seriously because they're putting on these ridiculous gravelly voices and talking about axes. Nobody wants to see that challenge for the tag titles.
Yes, I know. And just the Usos being scared of an axe and running away or whatever they did.
I was reminded of them before coming into the show tonight, because it came up in my timeline today on Twitter that a local wrestling promotion here in Maine called Limitless Wrestling, They're still running to this day, but 5 years ago today, they had their biggest show to date, and it featured, you know, Flip Gordon, Cody Rhodes, among a host of other names. Yeah. And one of those names was Warbeard Hansen. And he was presented like a legitimate big deal, and he was in this big man fatal four-way match. He was impressing the heck out of everybody. And then eventually, of course, he goes on to get signed by WWE, and now he's carrying a tiny axe and wearing face paint.
Yep. All right, Brandon, one more time as far as Twitter goes.
Yeah, you can follow me at BLeClaire12. I'm always happy to talk wrestling and music, especially movies and football and all that good stuff. So, yeah, give me a follow. I'll usually follow a lot of voices from the Torch back. I love talking with the Torch family, so definitely check it out.
Ready
and check out my Royal Rumble report tomorrow. I'll do my best.
Yes, pwtorch.com. See how Brandon does.
No promises. Well,
no, not at all. Hey, it is the first time. Follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. Thanks, everybody. By the way, if you're not VIP, you're going to miss out on our Rumble post show that I'll be hosting with Todd Martin and either Zach or Rich. That's Saturday night. We'll have that up for VIP members about an hour, just straight through coverage of our take on the show. We'll record as soon as the show ends. It should be available within an hour or so of the show ending. Greg Parks will be hosting the PW Torch Daily Cast live call-in show covering the Rumble tomorrow night. So look for a link to that in our Rumble reports at pwtorch.com. Thanks, everybody. It's a big weekend, and we're glad you chose to listen to us for your final, or perhaps your final preview of the Rumble. We'll talk to you next time.